Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Sadly, on the surface, the Dallas Cowboys were not armed and ready to drop bombs. They're now sitting at home in the playoffs with a few other teams after Super Wild Card Weekend asking, where did it all go wrong? Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We'll talk to ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky in a half hour about what we're supposed to make of a few performances here. Because, Chris, we've talked about the rest of the Dallas Cowboys organization. I feel like there is a Dak Prescott conversation in all of this because he got the payday, he is the dude, and he deserved all of it. But it wasn't like he elevated that team beyond where they were in their game this weekend. And I feel like we can say that about a few quarterbacks that we saw.
Oh, no doubt about it. But as it pertains to Dak, we can have the conversation while also recognizing that he ain't going nowhere because Jerry Jones gave him the bag, and that is an absolute bulletproof contract. So, I mean, they're paying him $40 million a year. I think they paid him something like $75 million in this season alone. So just think about that cash payout. It's unbelievable in terms of Dak being able to parlay what he did throughout his rookie contract and two franchise tags into the contract that he actually has now. But he's going to be a part of the Cowboys' long-term future. I just don't know which pieces on the offensive side of the ball are going to continue to be a part of that unit, because that group, based on some of the cap hits that are coming up in the next couple of years, is going to see some turnover.
We'll get to that coming up in about 20 minutes. We also want to hear from you, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. On the hotline, which team had the most impressive performance during Wild Card Weekend? We got a couple of submissions that we can get to, but Chris, the closing stanza, we had Super Wild Card Weekend for just the second year in a row in the NFL, and we had Monday Night Football joining the playoff sphere. It was awesome to see between Levy and the guys, between the Manning cast. We had it all set up, and then the actual game started, and the Rams decided to run straight over the Arizona Cardinals in this one, and it left J.J. Watt, star defensive end who came over, joined the Cardinals this season, missed a lot of it with injury, and managed to come back for this one. It left him deeming this season unquestionably a failure in their postgame presser.
I mean, it was a massive failure. I mean, from what we were capable of doing and from what we showed we can do to today, there's no other way to describe it than as a failure.
Chris, first off, fair or foul by J.J. Watt to come in late to the party and dub him with that?
That's a foul, flag on the play. You ain't played since week 7 and just showing up in the postseason. I get that you want to have an opportunity to compete for a championship, and the Arizona Cardinals gave you that. Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury, even though it was likely that you weren't going to be a major contributor in last night's game, they allowed you to put on a uniform. And the fact that you're going to show up and say that, it just feels like it's a little unfair for you to qualify the season as a failure or characterize it as a failure, and you weren't there for over half the year. If the guys that were there every single game want to say that, so be it. If Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach, wants to say that, I'm cool with that as well. But for J.J. Watt to come out and say that, nah, man, I can't buy that. And moreover, I think he's wrong, Gojo. This is not a failed season for the Arizona Cardinals. There has been incremental improvement for that program since Cliff Kingsbury got there. First year, 5-10-1. They took their lumps with a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. Last year, they were 8-8. This season, they were 11-6, and they were flirting with winning the division. As a matter of fact, they were in the driver's seat for winning the division when the calendar turned to December. I think that's a pretty good place to be. You were the fifth seed in a stacked NFC that had, what, 6 double-digit win teams? I don't understand how you could say that this is a failed season for the Arizona Cardinals. It absolutely isn't.
No, Chris, I'd agree with you. I think you always got to remember where your feet are in these situations, because we know this is the stock line for almost everyone. Everyone on the 32 teams heads into this season, and a lot of people convince themselves, all right, we got a chance at it this year. We believe we can win every game, yada, yada, all the cliches. You got to, as J.J. Watt, you're coming over from a different program, look at where these guys have been here and understand this is exactly what you just mentioned. This is building towards something. And you can echo that. Look what we managed to accomplish. And now if you're the Cardinals, you know what you got to do. You got to be able to finish better. You've seen get started on this thing. You've seen Kyler Murray can be a dynamic playmaker. And without DeAndre Hopkins, some things fell flat. You're probably going to need to add in the playmaking department, add to some depth on this team heading into the offseason. But then the charge and the task is figuring out how to finish the job if you were the Arizona Cardinals. This is not a failure because you were not at that Super Bowl or bust place, no matter what people inside the organization wanted to believe about that. Now, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Call or click today. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. The team they played, Chris, that's an entirely different story because we know the Rams had pushed all the chips to the middle of the table, and credit to them. While Matthew Stafford didn't have to stand up and be the guy, he wasn't what we saw down the last stretch of the season. The last four games where it was 9 turnovers in 4 games, something ridiculous like that. He played within himself, and Odell Beckham Jr., who they went and got in the middle of the season, showed up in a big way for them. Von Miller had a sack and 3 tackles for loss in this game, another midseason acquisition. This team that was Super Bowl or bust and is this season got off to the start that they needed, Chris. So how does the challenge change now for them going forward based on what we saw?
Well, it changes because they're going down to Tampa to play the GOAT in the reigning defending Super Bowl champions. I don't think that's complicated. But I do think we're going to find out a lot more about Matt Stafford in this game. Playoff Matt Stafford, that is. Like, we knew the metrics and all the statistics coming into this postseason, how Matt Stafford was 0-3, how his touchdown-to-turnover ratio was a little bit off in comparison to what he had done in the regular season throughout the course of his career. But he had a chance to exercise those demons. He was very efficient. What was he, 14-18, 2 touchdowns, 200 yards passing. Gojo, the game script didn't dictate Matt Stafford having to play outside of his mind. The pressure wasn't on him. It was, but it wasn't. People wanted him to check the blocks of being the starting quarterback on a team that was capable of winning a playoff game. He did that. But that was thanks in large part to Raheem Morris, the defensive coordinator for the Rams, coming up with an outstanding game plan, mixing and matching in coverages. He was in cover 3, cover 4, sprinkled in a little man, kept that Arizona offense and Kyler Murray off balance all night, took away his first and second option in the passing game, and gave that defensive front time to affect Kyler Murray early on. And then their offense was able to be efficient. They scored touchdowns on 2 of their first 3 drives, and then they ended up having a pick 6 in the shadow of Arizona's own goal line. The game completely flipped. The complexion changed, and Arizona wasn't able to find a way to dig themselves out of the hole in the second half. So I don't know how much this playoff win is on Matt Stafford. He didn't ruin the game, so I guess you got to give him credit for not throwing any pick sixes and having any turnovers. But I don't know that he was the main reason why they – matter of fact, I'll say this. He wasn't the main reason why they won that game. Good on him for not getting in the way of the team's success. But he's going to have to be a part of the difference when it comes to the outcome in the divisional round, because there's no way that he can be a passenger going up against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks.
No, and I'll say this. He gets credit because he made a bunch of the plays that were there to be made, but to what we've talked about, whether it's Dak Prescott, him, or others, we saw this weekend was defined by a group of quarterbacks that elevated their team and a group of quarterbacks that were there to do whatever the team was capable of. We saw Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tom Brady, and a number of others rise to the occasion, rise to the level of their training over the course of this weekend, and then we saw Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, and some others able to play well when there were plays to be made, but it was nothing outside of the game script in all this, and I am very worried about the Rams on the initial look at all this, Chris, because you mentioned what they were able to do on defense. Now you got a quarterback who's not making his first start as a postseason quarterback. You got the GOAT. And on the other side of this, what did the Rams get by doing? They got marquee performances, Sony Michel, Cam Akers coming back 6 months after a ruptured Achilles to be able to be productive for you on the ground. Chris, we saw against one of the best rushing offenses in football this weekend against the Philadelphia Eagles. That Tampa run defense, when you got everybody out there, that is not to be trifled with. And I feel like once you stop that, we've seen when you can't rely on play action as heavily for this offense in the Los Angeles Rams, life breaks down pretty quickly. And that's all of a sudden where if you got a prop with the over on Matthew Stafford interceptions, you may want to start looking at that one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But the one thing I will say is that Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line is banged up. I think this is going to come down to which offensive line can hold up against the opposing defensive front. Because you saw Tristan Wirfs get banged up in that Eagles game. He's in a walking boot right now. We'll see how the week of practice unfolds for him, along with the rest of the guys up front. But that Los Angeles Rams defensive line came to play last night. Von Miller had a sack. Aaron Donald had a half a sack. Leonard Floyd being able to get some pressure on Kyler Murray. If those guys can affect Tom Brady in the four-man rush the way that they were able to affect Kyler Murray, then you could be talking about a closer matchup than a lot of people would anticipate. Unless we not forget, last year in a primetime game, the L.A. Rams with Jared Goff at the helm went down to Tampa and went roughshod over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. Now, that was the last game that the Bucs lost, but that's a situation where a lot of those guys on that team have the confidence that they can go down there and perform when the lights are bright. Playoffs is a different animal. I get that. But this is going to be a really interesting game. And again, I come back to Matt Stafford having to be somebody that's a force multiplier as opposed to what we saw him do in his role last night.
Yeah, this is a matchup of the 1 and 2, respectively, quarterbacks in terms of touchdown passes this season between Brady and Matthew Stafford. And as you mentioned, Tom has lost both games he's played against the Rams since he joined the Bucs, week 11 of last year and week 3 of this season. We can get to more of that because we want to hear from you. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Who had the most impressive performance from this Super Wild Card weekend? We'll tell you ours next here, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We'll talk to Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst, about some of the quarterback performances we saw over the weekend. We'll also get to you. We see you on the on the call-in line out here. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776.
Knew it was bound to happen.
Hey, man, listen, we all make mistakes, and I make more than most, but we want to hear your most impressive performance from Wild Card Weekend. And, Chris, it's hard to look past what Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills did as a starting point for this one. Josh Allen went out here against the New England Patriots in the rubber match in that series and almost single-handedly blew the damn doors off of them here. It was a reminder that on his best day, Chris, Josh Allen, even in a field that includes Patrick Mahomes and the likely MVP in Aaron Rodgers, the greatest of all time in Tom Brady, on his best day, the most talented quarterback that remains in these playoffs is Josh Allen in Buffalo. And it's starting to look like when he's at full power, it might not be all that close.
No, it's not. And Josh Allen continues to have success against Bill Belichick coach defenses too, which is a little bit of an eyebrow raiser because we know that Bill Belichick, when he's facing off against relatively young quarterbacks, tends to dominate those guys. But what did Josh Allen do? He threw for over 300 yards and ran for over 50 yards. The exact same thing he did in their last matchup in the regular season in Foxborough. So this is one of those situations where I feel like the Bills finally have a quarterback that can best a Bill Belichick scheme defense because he has the ability to be able to utilize his legs as a weapon against other defenses when it comes to running the football, on design plays, when it comes to second reaction plays, getting out on the perimeter of the defense and having a run-pass option. Like, Josh Allen has all the tools in the tool bag, and he was in his bag on Saturday night, and that's why the Buffalo Bills were able to take the New England Patriots to the woodshed.
Yeah, that one really, to me, Chris, stands out on the top here. Like, looking at the rest of the weekend, to me, once you get past Josh Allen and his singular greatness, because when we look at what Patrick Mahomes was able to do, we know that was against a Steelers team that was limping into this thing. Ben Roethlisberger and company sneak in as the seventh seed in the AFC side here and are promptly shown the door. We didn't think they'd be able to keep up with Kansas City. We've seen this and better from Patrick Mahomes in the past, so I'm not willing to put him in the same category. Honestly, Chris, I know they became a pick that almost felt like the favorite by the end. But what the 49ers were able to do during the course of their upset win against the Dallas Cowboys, the only upset win for an underdog on the weekend, when all of a sudden you started to see Fred Warner, their top linebacker, go down during that game. Nick Bosa, their top D lineman and one of the best D linemen in football, go down during that game. And to still control the line of scrimmage as thoroughly as they did. Kyle Shanahan made some, I thought, boneheaded game management plays later on in that thing. But as far as the team on the field, that group step up and to me was more fast and physical from opening whistle to close in that game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they were a dominant outfit. They made it closer than it had to be, with some late-game miscues from Jimmy G in that offense. And the false start on the quarterback sneak play with Trent Williams, that's just inexcusable. That can't happen in terms of your pre-snap mechanics. You've got to find a way to be able to ice the game, especially knowing in that spot they converted and then had to play call back for 5 yards and then still tried to ice the game away. Like, that was one of those situations that cannot happen. But that being said, their defense was up for the task. They got two critical stops at the end of the game, and they let the Cowboys get in their own way. And so you give credit where credit is due. The run game for the 49ers and the defense, especially the front seven, is what ultimately has to win the day. And Kyle Shanahan called a game that played to the strengths of his team. We said it before this game with the X's and O's. The guy on the sideline for the 49ers wearing a headset was a lot better than the guy on the sidelines for the Dallas Cowboys, and that bared itself out. So I'm with you. That was a pretty impressive performance this weekend. Another performance that was probably the most dominant performance that a lot of people won't give credit to is what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did to the Philadelphia Eagles. Gojo, it was 31-0 with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers pretty much in the fourth quarter had their cars running in the parking lot ready to go home and celebrate a win. It wasn't a competitive game at all. Jalen Hurts, that Eagles offense, they couldn't move the ball. It was a situation where in the first half, I think Tampa had run something like 25 plays in Eagles territory as opposed to the Eagles running 3 or 4 plays in Bucs territory. That's how bad the disparity was, how much the field was tilted. And you got to give credit to that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense showing up, Shaq Barrett, JPP, Lavonte David, having the impact that we expected them to have when they returned from injury. We saw the game-changing play that Shaq Barrett had with that pick early in the third quarter. Like, those types of things are what makes that defense dynamic. We have some concerns about what they're capable of on the back end, but when you got guys that are pressure players in the front seven like the Bucs do, a lot of those concerns for Todd Bowles get alleviated.
It's so true, and shame on me at least, for looking and saying, oh yeah, that looks familiar, and just putting that to the side, because we've seen that last season, and we saw what they did. We know they've overcome a lot more to get to that this season, and it has to change the way that we evaluate what that team's done. We want to hear from you, though. Let's go out to Ron in Washington. Ron, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. Who had the most impressive performance of the weekend?
Well, I'm going to have to, can I pick an offense and a defense?
Sure.
All right, first time, long-time listener. I love listening to your show. You guys have so much good information going out over the wire. It's a great show. Lifelong Rams fan. So for the best offensive performance, definitely Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. They smoked them. I don't see anybody really being able to stop them when they're on their A game there. Defensively, the Rams. I don't think that there's too many teams out there. If the Rams defense gets on the field and play like they did the last 2 weeks, they really dominated the 49ers. In the first half of that game, at one point, almost close to the end of the second quarter, Briscoe only had like 13 yards positive, and they did the same thing with Arizona. I don't think that there's anybody that can really mess with them. I'm not worried about the Bucs because the Rams really dominated the last two games against
that,
the Bucs.
That becomes the interesting part of this, and we appreciate the call on this, Ron, is what it projects like going forward. That Rams defense stole the show, but coming up next, let's talk to a quarterback about their quarterback. How can Matthew Stafford fare when the product ticks up across the field from him in that Tampa Bay defense? We'll do that after this word from Indeed. Now, running your business requires a lot of running around. From bookkeeping to client meetings, you run it all. By the time you need to hire, well, you've run out of energy. Luckily, with Indeed Instant Match, you immediately receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description the moment you sponsor a job. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined. Hiring can finally run smoothly with Indeed. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit. Back with Dan Orlovsky next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. So much to take in coming off Super Wild Card Weekend that finished off with the Rams absolutely bulldozing the Cardinals on Monday Night Football last night. One of the folks watching on the great megacast on ESPN Plus with the NFL Live crew was our ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky, who joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Dan, you were in the that megacast last night on ESPN Plus with RC, Mina, and the rest of that crew there, and you got a front row seat to this one. So everyone's going to start with the quarterback on this. Matthew Stafford gets his first postseason win as an NFL quarterback, but what did you take away from his performance in this game?
absolutely fantastic, but he had plenty of support in doing that. You know, I went into the game, Gojo, thinking I needed to see the commitment of consistency out of Sean McVay to run the football. I thought that was the Cardinals' weakness defensively. It's been that way since J.J. went out. Obviously, he comes back last night after a long time away, but they just don't do a good job of fitting runs. And the commitment to say, okay, first down, let's run the outside zone. Let's run the football. We got four. Great. And instead of getting into empty and throwing the ball every play, let's get back and kind of get in our run game again. And that got into 32 and 33. And so they were able to be so efficient in that regards. And so that's how your quarterback goes 14 to 17 or whatever he was, but also had three drops. You know, I mean, I played a darn near perfect football game because, you know, again, sometimes I feel like we're stuck in this world where it's like, oh, quarterback played good. He must have played great. No, the team played really well, and he was supported. And when a quarterback is supported, he should play really well. And so that was the big thing. I also think, Mike, man, just you realize what the vision and the violence that Cam Akers brings to this football team. You know, in that zone scheme they run, the vision is such a big deal. And him finishing runs, such an important part for them, you know, obviously heading to Tampa Bay. You know, their defense was fantastic, but I really liked both play caller, quarterback, and tailback.
Dan, one of the themes from Super Wild Card Weekend was quarterbacks making their playoff debuts struggling, with Joe Burrow being the only one that got a win. They went 1-4 combined. Did that surprise you, or was that about what you expected?
No, it was about what I expected. You know, Mac Jones was playing against a Buffalo secondary that I think Buffalo's back seven is the best in football right now. Their coverage unit is flawless. And it really wasn't about Mac. Their defense for New England could not do anything against Josh Allen. Jalen Hurts was up against it when it comes to Tampa, strictly because the Eagles were a great accomplishment, but they were basically the watered-down version of the Cowboys. Took advantage of a really bad division. They hadn't beat anybody in the playoffs. You know, so I expected Jalen Hurts to struggle. You know, Kyler Murray was probably a little shocking how bad Kyler played, how bad that offense looked. I think everybody deserves blame, but Cliff was really bad with his plan. Kyler was really frantic as a player. You know, and then you know, Derek Carr, I thought Derek played, you know, probably what you would expect on the road. You know, I don't think he had a game. Obviously, it gave them a chance to win the football game at the end, but got beat by a better team and a better quarterback in moments than Joe Burrow. So kind of what I expected, Chris.
Kenny Angola Jr. talking to Dan Orlovsky. Dan, do you think Derek Carr is going to be the starter for Las Vegas heading into next year?
It should be, and if he's not, then that organization is going to make a mistake. I think Derek Carr is a top 10 player, top 12 player at the position. And I know we all think that these quarterbacks that are superstars fall off trees. Man, they don't. There's reasons why these cats get $35, $40 million a year. There's just not many people like them on planet Earth. And obviously, new general manager is going to come in. I don't believe they've done anything at head coach yet. We'll see what happens with that. But I just believe that Derek Carr is a really good player. And for the leadership that he showed for that organization this season, I mean, you still have at least five really good years of Derek Carr football left. I think just deciding to move on from Derek and chasing something that you think and cross your fingers and hope might be better would be a mistake.
Speaking of, you know, things growing on trees, Dan, Super Bowl winning coaches don't grow on trees yet. The conversation around the Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy is starting to heat up a little bit. I know Stephen Jones tried to throw cold water and said that he fully expects that Mike McCarthy will be back next season, but should he have a job for the Dallas Cowboys as their head coach going into 2022?
Chris, I just think it's really hard to bring him back as the head coach, man. Just keeping it real. This isn't Dan going, oh, we got to fire everybody. No, that's not. I just think it's really hard. So facts over feelings, right? Mike McCarthy in 2 years is 18-15 as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. A little bit above average. He's 6-9 as the head coach when he has Dak Prescott as his starting quarterback outside of the NFC East. 6-9. That's with a defensive player of the year candidate, a defensive rookie of the year runaway guy, a $100 million receiver, a $140 million quarterback, a $90 million tailback, and two Hall of Famers on the offensive line. 6-9. And we all focus on the clock management of this past weekend, but that's been the habitual kind of pattern that we've seen from Mike McCarthy all season. We could go back to week two against the Chargers and them letting the clocks tick down and them saying, well, we didn't call timeout because we didn't see the clock. Week three against the Eagles, it's 20-7 before half, a minute and 50 on the clock. They don't spend a timeout, and the Eagles run the clock out. Week six against the Patriots, they call timeout with 24 seconds left to kick the ball. They actually choose to kick off to New England when they didn't have to. Week 15 against the Giants, right before they have the completion to Dalton Schultz, and they don't take a shot at the end zone because they say they were in the O zone. Week 17 against the Cardinals, they use a call a timeout before the two-minute warning. They don't have the ability to challenge a fumble by one of their tailbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is repetitive behavior. So if you're Jerry Jones, you're sitting there and saying, this is an incredibly talented football team that was the most penalized team in football. They had 14 of them this past weekend. 8 of those penalties went for either a first down for San Francisco or took away a first down for Dallas. Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk to Mike McCarthy. What are we doing? So I just think it's hard to sit there and go, you know, especially if you're going to lose Dan Quinn, man, I think it's really hard to sit there and say we have to bring Mike McCarthy back.
Yeah, that's going to be the question, and has been. We know what Stephen Jones said, but we also know things can change very quickly when you've got an owner as aggressive, passionate, motivated as Jerry Jones is in this situation. Guys, check out Dan Orlovsky with the great crew on NFL Live Monday through Friday at 4 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. Dan, always appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon, all right?
All right, boys.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. Coming up next, yeah, Kyrie Irving's name is back in the news, and this time it feels very weird. I actually understand where he's coming from. I'll explain why next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is where you can get us on the hotline here. The most impressive performance from Super Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. We'll get back to that, and it is rare that we would deviate from an NFL weekend on a day like today. But then Kyrie Irving came out here and said the thing again here. The Brooklyn Nets star, who, if you've missed it, been busy in football season, who among us, right, has been back reinstated on that part-time basis since he cannot play home games for the Brooklyn Nets based on local mandates surrounding unvaccinated players in the National Basketball Association. He's been brought back to play on road games with the team where he is eligible. And now, with Kevin Durant now set to miss extended time with an injury, the process and the idea got brought up again to Kyrie Irving about him potentially getting vaccinated to make sure he could be a full-time presence for the team. Here was Kyrie's exchange in the Brooklyn Nets presser when it came to his change in vaccination status going forward.
Do you feel any more pressure to change your stance because Kevin's going to be out potentially for a couple months and the team needs you?
See, that's what I feel like ends up coming into a lot of this culture of basketball and sports and entertainment is – you bring in the team and you bring in situations that we're in, and Kev's going to heal. Kev's going to be okay, you know, and we're going to have to deal with that as his teammates. But in terms of where I am with my life outside of this, I stay rooted in my decision, and that's just what it is.
Now, Chris, normally Kyrie Irving saying something like this, insinuating that Kevin Durant's health can change, but his opinion can't, seems like a lot of cognitive dissonance that I'd have an issue with. But as we sit here now, in a year where the Brooklyn Nets started the season saying, based on the values that we hold dear here at the Brooklyn Nets, we're not going to allow someone to participate half in and half out on this team. We believe in togetherness and blah, blah, blah. and then they let Kyrie back to do this on his terms. If I'm him, I'm wondering why I got to change what I do either, because everything that he has done so far has been rewarded by this organization because he's really good at basketball, and I'm sure he thinks, why is that going to stop now just because Kevin's going to be out for a couple months?
Well, why it should stop right now is because you have to realize the impact that you have being a part-time player on the other two stars that make up the big three, that being James Harden and KD. And Gojo, one of the things that we talked about in the early going of this season was Kevin Durant and James Harden both being in the top five of minutes played. Now, that's since come down, but you're still talking about those guys averaging over 36 minutes per game, and we realized that that formula wasn't sustainable if they were all three going to be able to stay healthy and go on a run once we got to the postseason. A big part of this big three being able to have success is making sure you get your guys to the games that matter the most. And with Kyrie being a part-time player, that puts a lot more stress on those other two guys when it comes to those homestands and them having to play exorbitant minutes in order for the team to have a chance to be competitive. Not to mention the impact that you have on the role players not fully understanding on a night-in, night-out basis what it takes for the team to be successful, because you're missing a key component in Kyrie Irving, you know, every other game because of the home road stipulations and the mandate here in New York City. So I don't understand why Kyrie won't move off of his position, but it just brings to the light the fact that Kyrie is thinking about himself over the team. And we know that there are going to be some long-term implications with him taking the approach that he has with that vaccine, because there's a guy in James Harden that's a part of this big three that has chosen not to sign a long-term extension with the Brooklyn Nets organization. And it's hard for me to believe that Kyrie and what he did last year and the unexcused absence and then what he's doing this year with not being vaccinated, how that doesn't come into the math for him in terms of determining where he wants to play the rest of his career, well, the rest of his prime years of his career.
Yeah, Chris, and James Harden to me is an important swing state in all of this. Candy and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Because we talk about that word culture all the time. This is a prime example of it. You are what you allow to repeatedly happen. And they have allowed Kyrie Irving to repeatedly dictate the terms to this team based on his talent. And we heard when he came back, that first game when he came back, when we saw him light it up and everything looked great out there, Kevin Durant lined up to praise Kyrie and talk about how great he was. James Harden made the joke that I'm going to give him the vaccine myself and talked about how important he was coming back. But Chris, until those conversations get some teeth, until the only guys in the building, in Kevin Durant and James Harden, that can hold Kyrie accountable based on resume and ability do, we're going to keep getting this as a result, and I'm going to stop being shocked when it happens, because we thought that the Brooklyn Nets might be taking a stand, and we thought wrong. They folded like a cheap suit when it came time to really put this thing to the test in the middle of the season where their two stars were playing a ton of minutes, and so I have lost faith in that team's ability to hold him accountable.
Yeah, I've lost faith in that team's ability to hold Kyrie accountable because we've seen it in two consecutive seasons. But I'm starting to lose faith in the Brooklyn Nets as actually being able to win this thing as constituted, Gojo. And I know that's saying a lot because they have three immensely talented players. When you consider the offensive side of the game, you're probably talking about three top eight offensive players in the NBA. And yet, I'm not quite sure that they're going to be able to put it all together for a long enough period of time to be able to win a chip. We saw the injury concerns last year, and now they're starting to pop up again. Kevin Durant with an MCL sprain, he's going to be out for the next month and a half. Now you're putting a lot of that workload on James Harden, especially in the home games, no KD or Kyrie. What does that end up looking like? And is he going to be able to continue to stay healthy? Like he had hamstring concerns last year. So I'm starting to lose faith in the Brooklyn Nets in terms of their ability to finish the drill, just because I can't trust these guys to stay healthy based on the burden that Kyrie Irving is putting on the other two members of the big three.
Yep, and man, if anyone knows about that, you're right. James Harden, who not only lived this last year, but lived this basically every year that he was with the Houston Rockets, having enough to get this team through the regular season in top contention, but then sputtering and running out of gas when it came time down the stretch in the home season, as Kyrie Irving will not consider his COVID-19 vaccination stance in the wake of KD's injury. Coming up next, we will look at one quarterback and a comparison I never thought I'd feel comfortable making. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.